Hi everyone, Matt from the future here. Just jumping in with a cheeky little plug for the album that my brother Ash and I recorded a little while back. You might have heard Abby, Ian and I talking a bit about the project in recent episodes, but just wanted to give you the heads up that if you're interested, you can now listen to the album on Spotify or wherever you like to get your music. It's called Bad Winds Blow. And it's by Brian Hart, which is the name of the collaboration between Ash and I. I'm really proud of how it's turned out. I think there's some really cool stuff on there. And it was a really interesting project to work on because we set ourselves a real challenge with this. And that was, in the space of 12 hours, write and record from scratch an entire album. So we turned up to our family holiday house with no ideas, nothing prepared. Set up our equipment, a whole bunch of instruments, and just started and gave ourselves about an hour per track with a bit of time at the end to try and tidy a few things up and just went for it. And 12 hours later, we had 10 finished songs. And listening back to it now, I'm really happy with what we were able to create and really excited to share that with people. So if you're interested to hear how that all turned out, I'd love for you to take a listen. It's Bad Winds Blow by Brian Hart, wherever you like to get your music. And with any luck, I'll try and convince Ian and Abby to have a listen over the next couple of weeks, and we'll have a chat about it in a future episode. Thanks for listening.
Hello, and welcome back to the Album Files podcast. My name is Abby Mickey. I'm so excited that I got to pick the album for this episode. I'm joined by Matt Deneve.
Hello, hello. Looking forward to it.
And Ian Treloar.
Hello. This is exciting because it's a rare glimpse of nocturnal Abby Mickey. We're doing a slightly different schedule today. So it's early in the morning for us, late at night for Abby. And if you hear honking from children in the background and squealing and all sorts of, I don't know, domestic sounds, then that
the
is why
the tables have turned. We'll see how it goes. Because
how do you like it now?
I'm like a bed at 8 o'clock person.
Ah, well, you are up way past your bedtime, young lady.
I'm reading Divine Rivals, which I've been putting off because it's by Rebecca Ross, and she wrote A River Enchanted, which I loved, but the sequel I really didn't like. And I was like, okay, well, everyone's going on and on about this book, Divine Rivals. And so I feel like I have to read it. And it's about a journalist, which has been weird to read because I was like, maybe I do want to do war journalism, which I wouldn't be very good at. but anyway.
I thought I wanted to do war journalism. I don't think that now.
Yeah. Well, I do. It does sound like a little bit more thrilling than writing about bike racing, like a little bit more fulfilling,
maybe a bit more dangerous.
I had a question based on a book that you were reading recently. You were reading something called The Name of the Wind or something.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Did you find out what the name was?
No. You have to read it.
I like that you just told a joke that was like 3 weeks in the making. You just had time to think about that.
Yeah. It's good. Just needed the run-up. Yeah.
I just like to imagine you in the shower at some point in the last 3 weeks being like, oh, that's a good joke. I'll wheel that out next time. Next time Abby talks about books, I've got it.
What if it's Steve?
We're here to talk about music, not books. Before we chat about Griff, Ian, what have you been listening to lately?
My work music over the last few weeks has pretty heavily leaned towards Max Richter, who's a British composer who does just beautiful modern classical stuff, and a bunch of soundtracks. So you've probably heard something by him, even if you haven't identified that it is by him. So that's really beautiful and nice background music. I've also been enjoying revisiting the album, the self-titled album by a French post-black metal shoegaze post-punk band called Amateurs. They were a project of the main guy behind a band called Alcest and just had one album in 2007 or 2009 or something like that, which is a really fascinating blend of sort of, yeah, like French pop punk and Joy Division-y kind of stuff with a bit of black metal influence and some industrial influence. And it's a fascinating album. They just did one album and broke up, and it's really cool. So I was riding my bike listening to that and enjoying
it. When you say it combines those different genres, does it combine them within the space of one track, or is it like an album of here's our industrial track, here's our post-punk shoegaze track? How does that work?
Yeah, no, it's pretty... it's not so much within one song as like just a grab bag. So
yeah,
it's
right.
It's very stylistically diverse from one track to the next. But I did actually think of choosing that as my album for us to listen to, but then the black metal stuff was a little bit abrasive. But I can say that there would probably be like four or five songs that everyone would agree were great.
Okay.
And then some that we would not be able to come to consensus on.
What's the album called? I would like to listen.
Amesoeurs, Amesoeurs.
Sorry, you did say that it was self-titled. My bad.
We'll drop some links in the notes.
We have a Spotify playlist, so people can find it. I don't know if anyone actually listens to that.
That Spotify playlist, I listen to it sometimes, and it is wild. Absolutely all over the shop. It's a disaster.
Yeah, and I loved it a couple weeks ago. I threw like an audiobook clip in it just to... Because we were talking about what we listened to, and I said Name of the Wind. And so I put the audio... You can get, like, clips of the audiobook on Spotify, so I put that in the playlist.
Love that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
There is also some exciting new releases that have come out or are coming out. Sufjan Stevens has a new album, Javelin, which came out last week, which I haven't had the emotional strength to listen to yet because I think it's... likely to be fairly harrowing. He's going through some tough times at the moment. His partner, who he dedicated the album to, recently died. He's currently in a wheelchair, unable to walk because of some bacterial infection that will take months to recover from. So, grueling time for Sufjan Stevens, but I'm excited to listen to his new album.
And he already makes really sad music.
Yeah. So I was going to say, like, he's already coming from a very sad base. Oof.
Yeah. I've heard this album described as, or read this album being described as life-affirming. So I think that could be more cheerful than the backstory suggests, but I haven't listened to it yet.
Speaking of sad music, have you listened to the latest National album yet?
Still no. I tried to put it on and... I didn't feel like I was in the right spot, but I'm that's another one on my to-listen list.
What about Olivia Rodrigo?
Still on my to-listen list.
Okay.
I'm falling behind. I'm getting old.
Matt, what about you?
For me, it's been a lot of King Crimson the last couple of weeks. Do you guys know King Crimson at all? I feel like, Ian, you would have at least heard of them. Yeah, so...
I've heard of them, but I've never heard them.
Yeah, so King Crimson, for those who aren't aware, arguably one of the biggest prog rock bands of the last 50 years, and they literally have been around 50 years. Their first album came out in 1969 in the Court of the Crimson King, and you might recognize 21st Century Schizoid Man as a track from that, which was sampled on that Kanye album, My Twisted Dark Beautiful Fantasy, or whatever it's called. Anyway, so they're kind of giants of prog rock, and they've been around 50 years, and I got back into them this week because there's a documentary about their 50-year anniversary that's coming out quite soon, and it reminded me of how much I enjoyed their stuff. So I've been going back and listened to their debut album in 1969, the Lux Tongues in Aspic from 1973, and then their last album from 2003, Power to Believe, I was listening to as well. Just a fascinating band in terms of what they did. Prog rock, I guess, is how you'd capture them, but a whole lot of different elements in there, from like jazz fusion to experimental to soundscapey to math rock to industrial, a whole lot of different genres mixed in there. And some of the stuff in their last album, Power to Believe, is just the most astonishing music I've ever heard. Like, just so so angular and so dissonant in a lot of ways, but fascinating and engaging. So I'm really glad I got back into them this week, and I'm looking forward to spending more time with them because they're just an intriguing project, and can't wait for the documentary to be out on general release, I think in November or something like that.
50 years, how many albums is that? That's a long, deep discography to wade through.
Well, it's only 13 official studio albums, but then a whole lot of like live recordings and other recordings. The main guy behind it, the only consistent member, a guy called Robert Fripp, he has something like 700 recordings to his name or publications to his name, with a whole lot of collaborations with other people, including like Brian Eno and a whole lot of other luminaries from that space. So yeah, 13 studio albums, but a whole lot of stuff around that for people that want to dig a lot deep.
Abby, what have you been listening to?
Well, Ed Sheeran's new album released since we last recorded, Autumn Variations, which I love. Critically received as being the worst music he's ever made, but fans love it, and I think that's who he made it for. So yeah, I was kind of pissed off when I was like reading the reviews of it. Like one was like as dull as the gray autumn something something was stupid. Anyway, but I love it. I feel like it's really good, like just put it on anytime and it can play type music. And there's some happy stuff in there and there's some sad stuff in there. So I've been listening to that a lot. And also I'm gonna butcher his name, but you guys will know. Hozier?
Oh wow, I was gonna mention him this week actually. Yeah.
The Irish, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
His album Unreal Unearth, I have been listening to a ton, like for the last, well, since it came out, which I think was like 3 weeks ago or so. But there's a song on there with Brandi Carlile, Damage Gets Done. And I think I've listened to that song like at least 50 times in the last 5 days. I just put it on and just put it on repeat. I can't get enough of it. I wish that the song lasted for hours. I just listened to it for hours. It's so good. And it, Brandi Carlile is like my best friend's, Taylor Swift is to me what Brandi Carlile is to my best friend. And I've tried to get into her, and for some reason it's just like the music doesn't click. But there's been multiple times that she's featured on albums, and that song is my favorite song. So I just like, at some point I need to force myself to just like sit down with Brandi Carlile for weeks. Just listen to Brandi Carlile.
I think what you need, Abby, is you need the latest collaboration she did with Jacob Collier, really, is what you need.
God, she's everywhere. She's all over the map. Because the song that she did with Miley Cyrus was amazing.
What are the Brandi Carlile hits? Like, she was from the 80s or early 90s, isn't she?
No, I think she's... Well, I mean, she's putting out stuff really recently, and like she's touring and stuff right now. But she's like, she's not old enough to be from the 80s. She's like,
you're thinking,
who am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Belinda Carlisle, who I'm not sure if they're related. I'm just gonna check. But yeah, she was in is it the Bangles? Is that the name of the band? No, the Go-Go's. The Go-Go's.
The Bangles are good.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
The Bangles were in Gilmore Girls. For an episode.
A classic show.
Yeah.
So for a classic band.
Yeah. And I sent it to you guys, but the Wicked is celebrating its 20th anniversary, I believe. And the two Broadway leads and the guy that wrote the music for Wicked did the Tiny Desk. And it's amazing. Like, I swear to God, I've watched it so many times. I'm like almost embarrassed, and I cry every single time. Like, it's so good. But I just love Wicked. Hands down, my favorite musical ever, ever. I love it. And if I could see it one time a year, I would do it. It's a bold take, but Wizard of Oz is my favorite movie of all time. And it's like, a Wizard of Oz adjacent. Anyway, so that Tiny Desk was so good. So I've been listening for the last couple of days. I've been listening to the Wicked soundtrack.
Is Wicked the one that popularized Adele Dazeem?
What?
Oh, you don't know that.
No.
Idina Menzel?
Yeah, Idina Menzel.
You don't know Adele Dazeem?
No.
Oh, my God. So John Travolta at an awards ceremony was like,
oh, no.
Presenting the wickedly talented Adele Dazeem.
I remember that.
And just like misread the auto cue for a name totally, yeah. And just like went with it. But that's where Idina Menzel's from, right?
Well, yeah, she was like the lead in one of the leads in Wicked. Like that's how right. She got her start with Christian Chenoweth.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Kristen.
Some big hitters.
Yeah. And they are obviously the singers on the original, like cast recording that I've been listening to. But the ones from the Tiny Desk are like amazing. I don't know if either of you watched it, even though I sent it to you. Yeah, I didn't think so.
Sorry.
It's fine.
I think if I had had some resonance with the music, I've never seen Wicked, so maybe I need to do that first and then watch the Tiny Desk.
I was trying to think of a musical to compare it to, but I don't think that there is one. It's just so...
Just to circle back on the Hozier thing that you mentioned, have you heard his debut album from 2014?
Mm-mm. But I've seen like a ton of YouTube videos of him singing, and he's just like incredible.
Yeah, incredibly talented musician. You would have heard Take Me to Church from his debut, which is like his first big single. The whole album is quite astonishingly good, actually. So if you like his stuff and you want more, his debut 2014, I think it's just self-titled. Yeah, it's well worth a listen.
I like how he's like so... You would think that he's just like some guy like living at home, putting out music, the way that he kind of conducts himself on the internet. It's just so funny. And then he's like incredible.
I did not realize that he was the Take Me to Church guy.
Yeah.
I just know the song Shrike, which is on some playlist from Wasteland Baby, I don't know, 2019.
Quite a wide range of music this time. The playlist is going to be lit.
Maybe something.
And that's a really good song.
You guys know I like try to throw in every mention we have of anyone.
Mm. Yep.
Into like not only the things that you guys send me as what you've been listening to lately, but if we mention something else, I throw it in there.
We should try and concoct a particularly wild playlist.
Just game the system.
Yeah. We've talked about black metal already, so.
Well, let me put before you the most poppiest pop that ever popped. I don't know, it's not that poppy, I guess. But I was really excited to introduce you guys to Griff. I was happy that neither of you had heard of her, but she's pretty new, so I guess it's not that surprising. Sarah Faith Griffiths she kind of came on the scene in 2019 and then was named the rising star at the Brits in 2021 after releasing an EP, which is quite good, actually. I don't know if you guys listened to any of her other stuff than this. This was only a 20-minute album, so I kind of hope that you'd go and listen to some others. But that was how I discovered her, or how I was introduced to her. She performed Black Hole at the Brits, and the performance was amazing. And I followed her and then was super excited when a couple months later she released this mixtape. She was born in the UK. Her mom came over during the Vietnam War with her family. So she has an interesting like family life, and she's really religious, actually. But she taught herself how to record and produce music at a young age by learning how to do it on YouTube. And when she first took her music to labels to try to get signed, she didn't know that people weren't producing, writing, and performing their own music. which she did for most of this album. There was only two songs that she had other people involved in, but most of her music is her producing, making, and singing, or producing, writing, and performing. So pretty cool for someone who's quite young, born in 2001, which is like a child. But so the first song off the album that was released was Black Hole, and then One Foot in Front of the Other she released after that, and then after that she released Shade of Yellow and then released the whole album. And I love it. I feel like it is just like, put it, blast it in the car, sing your heart out, bop along, just have the time of your life. But there's also some really like real life themes throughout the songs that are like, that are so easy to relate to. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I'm curious to hear what you guys.
Yeah, I can start if that's okay with you, Ian. Yeah, like you said, Abby, I hadn't heard of Griff at all. And was surprised when I did some reading up on her after a bunch of listens to learn that she was so young. As you said, 22, which is pretty incredible for what she's doing. And I think I'm really glad you talked about the production there, because that was the thing that I wrote down very early on in my notes, and that kept coming back to a lot, was just how much the production stands out here and how well produced it is. I feel like it's hard to create stuff that's so sparsely produced but still feels so full, if that makes sense, and so rich. And I feel like she does an excellent job of, painting a vivid picture with very few ingredients or very few colors or whatever, however you want to say it. But the way the drums are produced, very front and center, I really like. Minimal use of synths to just keep everything moving along melodically. A lot of it depends on the strength of her vocals, which are impressively strong and, yeah, kind of gel the whole thing. And, yeah, reading that she did most of the production herself, like entirely herself, was quite a revelation. I was super impressed by that, and she did an amazing job of that. And like I said, that really stood out to me throughout a bunch of listens, was how nicely it was pulled together. I really like how short it is. It's kind of refreshing to have something this short in a way. Like, it feels more than an EP, even though it's about the length of an EP, but you still feel like you go on a bit of a journey, and there's some ups and downs. And you know, you have Earl Grey Tea towards the end there, which slows things down briefly. And yeah, there's still a bit of progress and a bit of a journey, even though the album is short. There's a couple of songs where she uses auto-tune in a really kind of arresting way, which I'm keen to get your thoughts on this, Abby, because I know you didn't love it with the Post Malone album that we talked about last time, but I think in One Foot in Front of the Other and Heart of Gold, there are a couple of sections where it feels a bit overwrought to me, and the auto-tune's not there to fix her vocal or to bring it back in tune as it might normally be. It feels like it's there as a stylistic choice, which didn't really work for me, because I feel like her vocals are so strong and they didn't need that embellishment to make them even... But just didn't need that embellishment. But I'm curious, before I go on, for your thoughts on that, Abby, because I noted that you didn't like that with Post Malone.
Yeah. For the producing part, so the only two songs that were produced by someone else, Black Hole was produced by Lost Boy, a.k.a. Peter Rycroft, and he's worked with, like, Kylie Minogue, Dua Lipa, Rita Ora, Louis Capaldi, Ellie Goulding, like, a lot of big British names. And then... Remembering My Dreams was produced by Alistair O'Donnell and co-written by him as well, with a couple other co-writers on there, but he produced it, and he's worked with Cleo Soul, which, if you guys remember, back or in the first pick of myself, Little Sims does a song with Cleo Soul. So and he's worked with Stormzy.
I like your synergies hand gesture.
Yeah. He's worked with Stormzy, Lily Allen, Little Mix. So the two producers that she did have on the album are people who have worked on some pretty iconic stuff over the years. For the auto-tune, it's funny. I wrote down, the only part I hate about this album is the auto-tune in One Foot in Front of the Other. Like, I just don't think it's necessary. And there is...
Yeah.
She has an acoustic version that's incredible. But I love the pop version. But I just could do without the auto-tune. Like, even in the other YouTube video that I sent you guys that I'm just assuming that you didn't have time to watch.
I did.
You did. Oh, thank God. In that one, she doesn't have the auto-tune when she's singing it in that version. And it's so much better. Like, it's just not necessary. And I think that that's just something that she's super young. And it's incredibly impressive that she's doing everything in these songs. But I think that that's just something that she's going to learn over the years. That it's just, it's not necessary. But I feel like with the length of this album, I like how short it is because it really leaves you wanting more. Like, you want to listen to it over, you want to start again because it's so short. And I think it makes me so excited for whatever's coming next, because she already released a single earlier, like a couple weeks ago. And so there's more coming. And I feel like because the album is so short, and because she drops songs like every once in a while, she just drops a single and with no context or anything, that it just like leaves you wanting more so much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I'm glad you agree on the auto-tune stuff. And I think you're right. She'll iron that kink out, I guess, as she goes. Or maybe she won't. I don't know. But I think, yeah, it just stood out to me as something that, given how strong everything else is, I just didn't feel like she needed to do that. But yeah, overall, just very, very solid. I really enjoyed it. I think I have a soft spot for this recording now, because the other day when I was looking after my son, I put it on, and the moment that I put on the first track, he just started dancing around the lounge room.
That was the video that I sent you guys, even though there was no audio. It was Lila dancing to this yeah. album.
And I think any bit of music that makes him do that is probably going to, yeah, I'm gonna have a soft spot for that. So yeah, we had a great time dancing around, because it is so short, you can, you know, dance through the whole thing, and it's great. And you know, yeah, you have a bit of a rest when Earl Grey Tea comes on. But even that song is interesting, because it does that kind of Olivia Rodrigo thing where it's like, hey, let's start with a piano ballad, and then halfway through I'm going to drop a double time kick drum and change the feel of it entirely, like she does with Driver's License and Vampire. Which is fine. But just on that, I feel like I did hear some quite strong influences throughout. I heard some Olivia Rodrigo in parts. I heard quite a bit of Taylor Swift in there, particularly the bridge on Earl Grey Tea. Shade of Yellow feels to me very much like a Taylor Swift song. And the chorus of Walk as well sounds like a Haim song. I don't know if you guys heard that, but
yes,
that's interesting.
Yes, 100%.
She said that of all those songs, that the song that's most influenced by Taylor Swift is Walk.
Yeah, I think I wrote here Walk. The verse is kind of like 1989/Reputation era Taylor Swift, yeah. And the chorus is like Haim.
Yeah.
And Black Hole sounds to me like an Olivia Rodrigo track, which isn't bad. Like, this is all good stuff, and it's very, very solid. It's just, yeah, I can hear the influences in there. And yeah, but overall, absolutely loved it. I'm very glad you recommended this one, and I'll be listening to her again for sure.
I wonder if you can call it influence, though, like if they were making music at the exact same time. I guess so. Influenced me always.
Yeah, I guess she's kind of like a contemporary of Olivia Rodrigo rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were, I believe, yeah, they were nominated at the same Brits. And so Sour did come out before One Foot in Front of the Other, but it was not that far before.
Not that long, yeah. Yeah, so maybe it wasn't directly influenced. Maybe it was more of a
vibe.
Responding to the vibe thing. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's no relation, or maybe she's never even heard of Olivia Rodrigo. Seems unlikely.
No, there's photos of them together at the Brits eating French fries.
Okay. Confirmed. Yeah. Right.
I think that one of the things that reminds me of Olivia Rodrigo in Black Hole particularly is it's that kind of conversational lyrical flow.
Mm.
Yeah.
That is the thing that conjures up Olivia Rodrigo for me more than anything else.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it's a really good thing. But yeah, I totally got, like, if we're playing bingo with references,
yeah.
Olivia Rodrigo, I thought that was spot on. Haim in Walk. And listening to this last night sent me down a Haim rabbit hole where I was just picking and choosing from songs from their debut album, and there's just so many bangers.
Oh, like, God, it's so good.
Incredible.
It's so good.
And their bass lines, like the way that the bass line interacts with their music is...
She's phenomenal. Just have you ever watched videos of incredible. Of her performing? Her bass face?
Her bass face.
So good. So good.
That's great. I also, with the auto-tune, it reminded me a bit of Imogen Heap. I don't know if you know Imogen Heap. She uses auto-tune liberally.
Yeah.
I think she's British. I'm not sure. So maybe... You would probably know if you watch Hide and Seek. The OC, Abby.
Oh, Hide I think and Seek. Even if you haven't seen The OC, I think Hide and Seek is like an all-timer.
I've definitely not watched The OC, no. But this is a funny... I don't know. It feels like of the three people sitting here, that one of them should have seen The OC, and it's the person that hasn't.
Well, I didn't watch it that much, but I do know that kind of broke her out into a bigger audience.
That, yeah, that's a stunning song, Hide and Seek. And I think it's... Sorry, just to jump in there, Ian. I think that is... That's not vocoder. It's like a kind of vocoder thing that she has. So it's like a... she sings one note and replicates her voice across a bunch of different harmonies.
I think the way...
It's a keyboard, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the way she does it is, like, she plays the chords on a keyboard and then it kind of modulates the harmonies with herself. Is that a vocoder?
I think so, yeah. I'm not entirely sure, but
yeah,
okay. Abby, if you haven't heard that song, Abby, I'm pretty sure you would have heard it, but if you haven't, you must listen to it. It's an absolute banger.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I agreed that the auto-tune parts on One Foot in Front of the Other were distracting. I had that note too.
I feel like that's just something where, like, if she'd had one other person in the room with her while they were producing it, that they would have been like, do we need it? But because she's doing it all on her own, that didn't happen, you know?
I wonder if it stands out because it's only used in a couple of spots. I wonder if... It would be less jarring if it was used throughout, or at least throughout the entire track, because it feels like it's just in specific parts of specific songs.
Yeah,
and so therefore it stands out.
I think that's why, because like when she does it in One Foot in Front of the Other, there's one word that she does it on that it just every single time I'm just like no, mm-mm.
No.
the rest of the song, love it, and she doesn't do that particular like. Aggressive auto-tune again in any other word and any other point in that song. But there's like one word that she's just channeled all the auto-tune to, and it's like very just abrasive. I think that is why it's like really jarring, because it's not there are songs on here where she doesn't use it at all, and then all of a sudden you're just listening along and you're like, oh god, your drums. It's not that bad. I feel like I'm over exaggerating. Ian, I want to know like what you thought as a whole.
I have some more sort of general thoughts. So on the whole, I think Matt summarized it really beautifully with his comments on the production. It is kind of stripped back, and when you're listening to it, it's quite sparse the way it's produced. But there's all these like little creaking and humming noises in the background that keep things interesting. I really loved the production of it. I also agree that it feels like a taster of potential. So it's something that has me really interested to know more, but it doesn't quite feel like you get enough, but you can't really fault somebody for being like, 21, 22 years old and not having produced enough music. Like it's just like, this is something that we get to wait for.
When I saw her at the Brits and I like went and looked her up, I was like, she's only got like four songs. How am I going to survive?
And I think that's really exciting when you come across an artist like that, they might only have one or two songs and you're like, ah, I want to hear everything. And it's kind of similar with Olivia Rodrigo when she first came out. Like there was just Driver's License and maybe one or two other songs, and it got everyone really excited for the debut album proper. I read that her record label and Griff herself don't see this as her debut album. They see this as like a mixtape and a teaser for what's to come in the form of something longer. So I think that that's reason to be excited about what's going to come next. I think that it's a little bit uneven across the album. Like, there are definitely songs that are stronger than others. I don't think it maintains a consistently high sort of bar across the whole thing. But the good songs are really, really good. Like Black Hole, I think that that's such a great way to start the album, mixtape, EP, whatever this is. And it's really propulsive, but it's still got this sense of space. It's got this really expressive vocal line. I really love the way the harmonies in the last minute are sort of layered up. Do you guys remember the song Somebody That I Used To Know by Gotye?
Yeah, that was a
It really reminds me of
hit.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I guess I could see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I find it quite reminiscent of that, which is absolutely not a bad thing because that song's great. But yeah, I didn't love One Foot in Front of the Other and Shade of Yellow. I think that that was kind of a dip, but I liked Heart of Gold, Remembering My Dreams. And again, with Remembering My Dreams, like there's these production choices, which I really enjoyed. If we're getting into the second by second at 53 seconds, there's like this big kind of boom kind of thing where it shifts into the chorus. And I really found myself looking forward to that particular moment just because it's like, oh, here we go. Earl Grey Tea is quite a minimalistic start, but again, like an outstanding bridge. I liked the way it was constructed as well. It's like almost like a palindrome. It starts in one way, finishes in that way, and then there's the middle bit, and it's like a bell curve. It's cool.
Just on that, what do you think of the piano sound in that? Because I wrote that it's a really interesting sound they use, because there's obviously some kind of, they've recorded some of the, I don't know, the ambient noise of, I don't know exactly what it is in the piano, but there's something there that makes it quite interesting to listen to.
Yeah, I don't know whether they've just like chucked a microphone down inside it or something like that to get more nuance and that sort of creak and. I think you probably have like the pedal mic'd as well at some point, because at the start there's like the creaky noise, whether that's the sustain pedal or I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a really interesting.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, it just it doesn't detract at all from what the piano is doing, but it also just adds this character to it that makes you kind of go, oh, what's going on there? And then you kind of hear it at the end as everything else pulls away. And yeah, kind of a bold choice in a way, but a really cool one, I thought.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It makes it feel more organic, I think. It's more lived in. Like a lot of music is so glossy, and it's kind of a counterpoint to that auto-tune and that overproduction, but that use of technology. This just feels like it's some rickety old piano in a creaky house or something, and that's kind of nice. And then Walk, I loved the bass line, which was, as I said before, reminds me of Haim. Again, loved the way that she harmonizes with herself. It's just like a real sugar rush. So yeah, I think that there's three or four outstanding songs and the rest of them are good. So it's a pretty impressive debut offering from Griff.
I kind of hope that if and when she does record a full-length album that it is as tight as this is. I think I've listened to this and find it more cohesive than you do, I think, Ian. And I think one of its strengths to me is that it doesn't feel like there are any tracks that are noticeably worse than the others. Like, there are some that are better, but I don't think there's any that's worse. I hope that she doesn't get to recording an album and there's a bunch of filler in there, because I think that can sometimes happen. And like I said before, I found this refreshing in that it is short and punchy and that it does just hum along and you get to the end very quickly. And yeah, you do want more because it has been so short and so good. So I hope that she keeps up that quality when she does something longer, because this was super impressive.
I think part of it is that no individual song overstays its welcome either. Like, it's 7 songs, all of them between 2.5 and 3.5 minutes. There's not a lot of filler in each individual song, let alone the thing as a whole. So it is very tight. And I can't imagine that when an album comes out that she's going to be doing like a 9-minute epic. I think that there's an economy in the way that she produces, an economy in the way that she writes and the way that she records that does lend itself to those shorter, more succinct statements. Sorry, Abby, I cut you off.
No, I was going to ask Matt what you thought of the video that I sent you, the mixtape debut concert.
Yeah, very good. I haven't watched all of it, but I was impressed by what I saw. I think we talked before about how strong her vocals are, and for somebody so young, I was quite impressed by her stage presence as well. Very self-assured and confident on stage, and yeah, just very impressive, I think, is how I'd describe that. And her voice really doesn't change all that much for the live setting, which is not all that easy to do. I think you can often see a dip there in quality, and she was still very strong there. So yeah, impressive for sure.
I feel like, yeah, I don't really agree with you, Ian, that, I mean, I think it's just strong all the way through, but I do think that part of that is the length. And I love watching her perform live because she's like a very calming presence, and it just looks like she's having so much fun just like singing. And I think that was what hooked me with the Brits performance. Like, even with that, like, I think she made her own outfit for the performance. Like, her talent knows no bounds. Like, it's just, it's really cool. And I feel like with this album, like, there's not or a mixtape or whatever, like, there's not a single part of it other than just the one auto-tuned word in one foot in front of the other. Cause I feel like the other auto-tuned parts, like, I forget them as soon as they happen, but that one word, I just can't. But like, Shade of Yellow, I just love, like, I love the door knocking. Like, it's just such a, like, such a fun little moment. And like the imagery of, like, I don't know. I remember like driving Tom to the airport one day at like 2 a.m. and driving on the motorway and listening to it and just being like, this is so fun, this moment in my life. But yeah, like, even Earl Grey Tea, which is a much different vibe than the rest of the album, I love that song. It's so good. And I feel like the whole album itself, like, I would put it on and I wouldn't like know or care when it came out or like any context around it. It's just like, oh, this is really a good listen. Like, my ears are happy right now listening to this.
I would agree with that entirely. Yeah, very, very enjoyable listen. And just, yeah, Shade of Yellow, I think, Ian, you mentioned that before. I adored that track as well. The driving arpeggio synth that kind of underpins the whole thing, I really like. And you also mentioned the backing vocals. I think her use of backing vocals and vocoder effects at times to provide that kind of harmonic underpinning for everything, I really enjoyed that. My other favorites, Heart of Gold. The chorus and that is great. The drums are great. And the chorus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the chorus on Remembering My Dreams as well. Those are three. Those three are probably my favorite tracks. There's three in the middle there. But again, I didn't think there was a bad track on here. Yeah. Would listen again.
Oh, I'm so happy. Oh, man. I was stressed. And then I was listening to it today and I was like, no, they're going to like it. They're going to like it. It's going to be fine. They're going to like it.
I think it's pretty hard not to like it. I'm trying to think how you would, like, how would you criticize it, or what, like, it doesn't feel like there's much you could pull out of it and be critical of, really. Like, unless
maybe
you just,
I gave
don't
you
like
too
fun.
Easy of an offering. I should have. I don't know. If I put Ed Sheeran in front of you, you'd just vomit it back up at me.
Well, we've got but Ian to give us something.
We try to keep it down.
Just a tiny thing on one foot in front of the other. The way that track starts, it does that interesting thing where you have a melody, and as a listener, you think you understand what the timing and the rhythm of it is. And then as other instruments come in, you realize that the rhythm is actually different. I don't know if you guys picked that up. There is actually a name for that phenomenon. I can't remember what it's called, but I really like it when artists do that, where you create an expectation for the listener and then you change the reality of it at some point through there. I always like that as a production and songwriting choice. So I really like that.
Oh, and I don't know if you saw when she does Shade of Yellow in the live show, she does with a loop track her own voice. Super cool.
Yeah,
she
that's just great.
Loops herself. Yeah. Cool. Should we rate it? It's been a short episode today. There's not really much more to say, though.
Yeah, short episode. Album.
I'm taking this one as a win. Like, I know that the goal is to, like, have conversations, but I feel like another goal should be to, like, introduce each other to music that we maybe wouldn't have heard of that we'll like and listen to in the future. And so I feel like even if this is a short episode, because there's not a ton to, like, criticize or dig into or anything like that, I feel victory in my heart that I've introduced you to an artist that you will like in the future.
100%.
I take this podcast really personally.
You've done great. Thank you.
It's like a 9.8 out of 10 for me. And I feel like the only reason I think the only reason it's lost 0.2 points is because there's just not more. I don't even want it to be another 30 minutes, but like another 10 minutes would be great.
That's a very high rating. Is that the highest we've had on the show?
Maybe.
Must be.
I'm sure we've had some 10s.
We've never had a 10 out of 10.
We have.
We've never had a 10.
No.
We need to go back and collate all the ratings.
Yeah, we definitely do. I joked that that Carly Rae Jepsen Loneliest Time is a 10 out of 10, but that was a joke. I didn't mean it. I'd have to give it a serious rating.
Sorry, Carly.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's up there, but it's not a 10 out of 10. But yeah.
The joke's on you.
she'll have to remove that little badge on her website now.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 album files.
this album was like really well received, like critically received, actually. Like really well. 5 out of 5 from NME, which is, they're hard to please. Over there, but in general it didn't have a lot of reviews because it really wasn't very widely known, but the people that did, the publications that did review her, gave her high ratings.
Pitchfork didn't review it, did they?
Mm-mm.
That's always a litmus test for me.
Snobs.
Yeah. That's right. Nothing less than a full album.
Yeah. What do you guys rate it?
For me, probably, I'd say 8.4. I'll give it 8.4 out of 10. It's very good. It's
respectable, yeah.
7.5 for me, because there were a couple of songs that I liked less, but there are some really, really strong moments that have me really excited about hearing more.
Well,
yeah, I think that's one of the things that I'll take away from that is, from this whole thing is, one, she's great, but two, can't wait for what's next. And if this is an indication of what she can do at 22, then future's pretty bright.
Yeah, I mean her other stuff, that she's got a couple singles and stuff, and they're all so good. Like her EP that she released herself has some stuff on there that's really good, and like Vertigo, the song that she just released, is really good. There's some other stuff out there. It's just like very scarce, but it's all phenomenal.
There's also something kind of nice about getting to know an artist quite early in their career, rather than coming to somebody for the first time being like, oh, cool. So they've got 9 studio albums and 4 live recordings and 6 EPs. And now I feel a compulsion to listen to all of it. It's like, no, you can just listen to this one mixtape and an EP, and you'll have a pretty good idea of everything she's done. So,
God, imagine maybe that speaks Taylor Swift like late.
Yeah,
imagine coming to Taylor Swift now. Oh my God. Sorry, Matt.
No time like the present. I mean, maybe that just speaks more to my own kind of like need to be across everything, or to try and complete it, as it were. You know everything or do everything related to a thing, but
read the entire Expanse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, once you started a series, you got to finish a series. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see where she goes next for sure.
If you discover Taylor Swift now, I mean, how would you even grapple with the non-Taylor's versions, the Taylor's versions? It'd be so confusing.
Oh, maybe there's an episode.
I know, a bonus episode. Is a...
You do a bonus episode about a non-Taylor Swift listener's guide to listen to Taylor Swift. Like, where do you start? What's the journey you should go on? What do you need to know? I think that'd be interesting to people.
I enjoyed watching Abby, like, staring. I know this is an audio medium, but imagine Abby just staring off into middle distance, her eyes narrowing slightly, like cogs whirring as she's like, imagine what that would be like. Just mind blown.
Well, I was thinking the other day, like, how cool would it be if you could just erase a book from your brain? Like, I read Name of the Wind for the third time. I was thinking about it and I was like, man, I wish I could just erase it from my brain and I could just read it again. Because even though with a book that dense, like, there's always something new that grabs your attention when you read it. I still read it in like 5 days. Like, it's so good that there's always something. And like, controversially, Harry Potter is similar, right? Like, you can read it over and over and over. And Lord of the Rings is similar. Like, read it 100 times and you'll always notice something new every time you read it. But how cool would it be if you could just like read a book, love it, erase it from your brain, and a year later go back and like read it again? I would erase Fourth Wing in a second, just so I could just, my whole life would just be like reading Fourth Wing, erasing it, and then reading it again and erasing it. And I wouldn't be mad. Like, it would be totally fine. But imagine if you could just like wipe Taylor Swift from your brain and re-listen. Like, I was thinking about this actually the other day. If I could like clear Taylor Swift, like command delete or whatever, Taylor Swift from my brain, and I listen to her music, would I still like it? Like, without the nostalgia and the ties to life, like, would I still enjoy it? It's like a like really, like, it makes me feel sick to my stomach actually thinking about.
It's a different reality.
What if it's all a lie?
Who am I?
What if I don't like Taylor Swift at all?
What is life? Anyway, Ian, what's your pick?
Okay.
Oh,
God.
Come on, give us something challenging. Something meaty.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit longer. Not an overly onerous listen, but I'm going to put in front of you an album by a French band called Alceste, and it's French, the title, so I'm going to absolutely butcher this. Souvenirs d'un autre monde, Memories from Another World, their 2007 debut album.
It's our first non-English album. It's exciting.
Yeah, well, I think the lyrics are kind of secondary on this.
Hmm.
Great. The reason why I'm putting this in front of you is because it's basically created an entire genre. So it's a hugely influential album in the space that it's in, which is this blend of black metal influences with shoegaze and dream pop kind of sounds, which is probably from that where about like 35% of the music that I listen to has been influenced by this album. This is kind of the starting point for an entire genre, which has given rise to bands like Sadness, who I bang on about constantly, Def Heaven, lots of different bands, very, very influential album in the metal and shoegaze sort of community, I would say. It probably sounds scarier than it is. So just listen to it with an open mind. There is no screaming. Everything is sung. So there's melodies throughout. I chose this album over some of their other albums because I think that it's not their best album, but it's one of their least abrasive ones. So the black metal influence comes through more in the distortion and the sort of drum sounds and things like that, rather than the screaming or the vocals. And I think that it's a really interesting album in the way that it melds those two genres, but I also think it's quite an accessible one if you're not into that style of music, and might send you on a similar path to me. Who knows?
Well, I knew that this day would come eventually.
We've got off lightly here, Abby. Well, I can tell you from experience that we've got off lightly here, so you don't need to worry.
Yeah, I would say that I think it's quite a beautiful album rather than a challenging album or a angry or sad album. It's like it's a uplifting listen. So no trigger warnings required.
Okay.
You've gone very quiet, Abby.
It's funny watching.
Worried for you.
Just for the listeners, it's fascinating watching both Ian and Abby on screen here. Ian's kind of like trepidatiously introducing this album, providing caveats with a look of like, I hope they don't hate it. And Abby's there with her head in her hands going like, what are we in for? So this is going to be
like
going to be
shrinking away from the conversation, just dissolving into the nook in her sofa.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited. That was the whole point of this podcast, was to like branch out our minds and our musical tastes. Actually, I think we can end the podcast now with an audio clip from a listener and friend of Ian. It's mostly just our friends that listen to this podcast, which is great.
Hi, Abby, Ian, and Matt. Great to have you back after your European sojourn. So, long time listener, first time caller. I'm Laura. I'm from Melbourne, Australia. I met Ian at uni. He was the only friend I made during that degree, and much of our early friendship was grounded in him talking about music with my limited knowledge and general confusion of the obscure bands he was listening to, which still baffle me. So I wanted to say thank you for your podcast. I'm really enjoying it. I started listening to music in the Napster and LimeWire era, so I've previously been someone who listens to the most popular track and then of an artist and then works my way through their top singles. So it's only been more recently that I've started listening to albums, probably through COVID. It doesn't always come naturally to me in my short attention span, so it's been a really different way of listening to and approaching music. It's been great and such a joy to listen to the three of you talk about the albums that you've loved and, yeah, bringing listeners along with you. Listening to your differences also in music has been a highlight. Abby, listening to Silverchair was a particularly good moment as an Australian. That was really fun to hear. Yeah, Abby, thank you for your passion for Ed Sheeran. It's been great and it's made me go back and listen to his body of work. And I can't wait for the time that you do an Ed Sheeran episode and how much Ian will hate that. I also love that you have a sad girl playlist. I also have playlists for certain moods and I think everyone should. It's really cathartic just to lean into that. Matt, thank you for the gift of Lizzie McAlpine and especially her Tiny Desk concert. By the way, it's been like a good couple of episodes since you guys have mentioned Tiny Desk concerts, so get back on that. And also for introducing me to the word Frisian, which I've long sort of felt but not actually had the word or term for, so that was really fun. Ian, because I know you, the albums that you've picked I've found really interesting. I don't often get the time to actually listen to your views and insights on music, and it's given me a different appreciation for the bands that I might have not listened to properly when you've talked about them in passing. Although this wasn't quite one of them, one of the episodes that I particularly enjoyed was the Frightened Rabbit album, The Midnight Organ Fight. I've had a complicated relationship with that band. It was the favourite band of my late husband. Since your episode, I've been able to listen to not just Frightened Rabbit, but the album through a different lens, which has been really great. I would argue, though, that Old Fashioned is not the worst song. But I do appreciate your very enthusiastic thoughts on how much you hated that and several other songs throughout this podcast. Listening to you guys share music has been really wonderful. It's really great to hear you talk about the music that you love and learning the nuances of how you've listened to particular albums and the place it has in your lives. It's really been a joy. I've learnt and listened to something new from pretty much every episode, and I've really appreciated it. So thanks, guys.